If you've been following the frac sand issue, you've no doubt heard the term local control. There have been claims that local control is under attack by wealthy industrial sand companies, along with claims by the industry that local officials have gone too far with their local authority by creating ordinances so punitive that companies are effectively being forced out of certain areas. And also, the issue of property rights has come up all along this discussion. It's a big one, it's a big discussion that is, and it's been going on since frac sand companies began multiplying around 5 years ago. And it's been renewed during the last 2 years as Republican state lawmakers have introduced bills seeking to change the relationship between frac sand miners and local governments. This hour, we bring on two men who have experience on both sides of this issue. First, joining me in studio, I'd like to welcome Brian Nodolf. Brian is an attorney with Spangler, Nodolf, Bruder, and Klinkhammer LLC in Eau Claire, who represents a frac sand mining firm in Pepin County called Greg Beckel Trucking and Excavating. Brian Nodolf, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Good to have you. And joining us by phone, I'd like to welcome Rick Stottleman. Rick is the executive director of the Wisconsin Towns Association, which advocates for local governments across the state. I think it's something like, well, hundreds. It's in the hundreds of towns. Rick Stottleman, thanks for joining us this morning as well.
Good morning, Rich. Good morning, the audience.
Good morning. And I'd like to bring in our listeners to the discussion. What do you think is the proper role of local government when it comes to frac sand mining, or in general, I guess? Do you think local governments are trying to create regulations so strict as to keep sand mining out? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got open phone lines. We'll get to the calls in just a bit. Again, 800-228-5615. We're talking about local control as it relates to sand mining. So I'd like to start with Rick Stottleman, and we hear a lot of talk about local control when it comes to frac sand mining and other issues. But Rick, what kind of things are we actually talking about? What is local control in this realm?
Well, local control means that the local governments, and you mentioned a lot of governments. There's actually 1,257 towns in total, towns, cities, villages, and counties. There's about 1,800 in Wisconsin, and we have a very strong system of local government. And these local governments have options to, in effect, protect community interest. And probably the strongest local control is zoning, which is a land use control in which you control uses on land by zones, and in those zoning ordinances, there are certain things that are permitted in certain zones, other things are conditional, and there could be variances. So you have a system of structure of regulating land uses through zoning. And there's other regulations that would be valid under both the town's power, under village powers, to regulate for public health and safety using village powers. And cities and villages have what's called home rule to regulate for public health and safety. And those ordinances are typically a licensing or permitting type ordinances, and they are type of ordinances that are intended to require permits or licenses with conditions upon how the licenses are to be given and requirements to be applied. Local control means, again, local governments doing activities or regulations to protect their community interest, to regulate activities. And it's been around, and we've had local control issues for a number of years, and local control has actually been challenged in a number of different things, including in past livestock siting, where we ended up having a state set standards for large farms over 1,000 animal units. Local governments still have a permitting authority, but state standards apply. Wind turbine siting is another one where the state has come in and preempted and limited the authority as far as setting ordinances, distances from property lines, distances from residences. And there's been other issues that have risen in trying to limit local control, and that most recently in the state budget is the state has set standards and requirements and procedural limits on local government's authority to regulate wireless communication towers. So local control has been around for a long time, and zoning being the strongest authority, village powers and home rule for cities and villages being the authority to do regulation through public health safety type ordinances, regulations. And there's been, you know, a lot of challenges on local control over the years. As you said, it's really only been in the last 2 years. And in fact, really only last year in October was the first bill in this last session that really did try to preempt that local control in relation to non-metallic mining.
Now, you mentioned you mentioned the zoning, you mentioned home rule, you mentioned a lot of things that some people might not be familiar with. When it comes to some of the towns, villages, and counties that are unzoned, that don't have zoning or choose not to be zoned, there was a court decision that kind of brought up something called police powers. Could you explain that a little bit? Then I want to go to Brian because he actually worked on this Supreme Court case. But what did this
Schwebelhofer versus Cook Town of Cook's Valley case initially was challenged on the grounds that the ordinance was a zoning ordinance and hadn't been adopted using proper procedures for zoning. We have about 750 towns in the 1,257 that are under county zoning, and then the county does the zoning, although the town has authority and procedures on it. We have another 250 towns that have town zoning, and under that, there may be some county oversight if the county has a zoning ordinance, or it could be solely on the town if there's no county zoning. And then there's still about 230-plus towns that have neither town nor county zoning. Any town using village powers, which is a grant of authority from the electors at an annual or special town meeting, the electors can adopt ordinances to regulate for public health and safety. It's very close to what cities and villages have by constitution, and cities and villages have by Wisconsin Constitution home rule. Towns or statutory bodies do not have home rule, but the use of village powers, which is a grant of authority, as I said, from the electors at an annual or special town meeting, electors expands the board's authority, town board that is, to adopt ordinances to regulate for public health and safety. And again, that's village powers is what they, basically the Schwebelhofer case was found on to be a valid ordinance.
Now, Brian Nodolf, the Schwebelhofer case, you worked on that at the circuit court level. What was at issue in that case?
Sure. Three things were actually pled out in that case. One was that the ordinance was not in essence a zoning ordinance, and the town did not have zoning. The second issue pled out was, well, even if you find it to be a valid police power ordinance, we believe it's unconstitutionally vague. And the third issue was unique to the town and probably not relevant for the discussion today. The circuit court in that case, I represented the plaintiffs, found that we were correct and that this was in fact a zoning ordinance and struck it down because the town did not have zoning. We never got to the second issue of whether or not it was unconstitutionally vague because the court made a determination that it was an invalid ordinance. And I think that's an important point because what we haven't seen ultimately is at the Supreme Court level, the Supreme Court declared it to be a valid police power ordinance and said it was not zoning. I did not represent the plaintiffs in that action. The second issue, and I think is one that's relevant, I think Mr. Stileman may certainly have some comments on that, is that we have not yet seen litigation talking about what's required of an ordinance to be a valid ordinance because the court never got to that question. Hmm. A lot of people say that the Schwebelhofer decision affirmed the ordinance itself. It affirmed that it was not a zoning ordinance. It didn't get to the heart of the ordinance itself in terms of whether or not the terms themselves were valid.
So then there's still gray area as far as you're concerned in this?
There's a great deal of gray area. I think that this issue will probably go on for quite some time. One of the interesting notes in Schwebelhofer, there's a footnote, and I can't remember what number it is, but there's basically an invitation from the Supreme Court to say the legislature, you may want to step in and deal with this issue. And that's what you're seeing with what was known as Senate Bill 349 and now Senate Bill 632.
Mm-hmm. Rick Stuttleman, what are your thoughts on the gray area as far as police powers? Do you think that the courts have decided that, you know, because they sided with the town in that case, that there is no gray area, or do you believe that there is some confusion too?
Well, I agree with Brian's comment that the court didn't address whether this particular ordinance was constitutional or arbitrary and capricious, and in fact, the decision was based upon the ability of a town to use village powers. I have certainly cautioned towns, in as much as we can in the last 2 years, that we need to have reasonable ordinances. That if we try to adopt ordinances that are unreasonable or go beyond what are legitimate regulations for public health and safety, or that are attempts to just to shut down, with this case, non-metallic mining, or in any other type of police-type ordinance of village powers exercise, that if they're unreasonable attempts to regulate and they're arbitrary and capricious, they could very well be struck down. And we've tried to caution members and also citizens who keep pushing towns to try to do more to regulate to be careful and to be reasonable in their ordinances. We did training over 2 years ago, started in actually December of 2011 and did another one in January of 2012 up in the Eau Claire area at a couple different sites there, had over 600 people. We put a lot of material on our website with sample type of things and sample agreements, sample ordinances, highway agreements, a little background as much as possible on industrial sand and why it's, you know, an issue in our state. And with that, we've really tried to caution our members and towns in general is to be reasonable. And I'll be up front and say to the public as a whole that if we end up being, again, we may face additional legislative attempts to preempt in the future, and it'll come because some of the ordinances have gone too far. That's kind of what's happened in some of the other previous preemptions that I mentioned. Livestock siting, we started seeing setbacks that were unreasonable. Wind turbine siting, we had a county that basically tried to adopt an ordinance that was going to be a one-mile setback for any wind turbines. These are commercial wind turbines from a residence. And when you put map the county of all residences, you found there was no place they could be. So those kind of ordinances that go beyond what are reasonable can very well be challenged. So I agree with Brian that there could be an individual challenge in any one particular ordinance. We still we take the position that that's a local decision, and that's something that may very well continue. There's been no cases, to my knowledge, that have actually found any existing ordinances as being arbitrary and capricious or unreasonable. That could still continue to be challenged, as Brian indicated.
Brian, you'd like to chime in?
Sure. I mean, one of the issues, the previous bill was known as Senate Bill 349, and one of the main criticisms of 349 was that it was alleged to preempt local control, and it wasn't at all. What it said was that you have different tools in your toolbox. One is zoning. Another is police power. What they're saying is, no, if you want to regulate land use, and we can dress up a police power ordinance however you want to, it's regulating land use. If you want to regulate land use, you do it through zoning. We also hear comments about, well, these towns are unprotected. I think an important distinction has to be made is they're unprotected by choice. Towns have the ability, either through town zoning or county zoning, depending on how they want to do it and different mechanisms, to implement zoning. Many towns simply don't want to because although they may want to regulate an industry such as non-metallic mining, they don't want their particular land use touched. They don't want their agricultural land use touched. They don't want their industrial use. So our position, in at least my position representing industry, is that we wholeheartedly support local control. That control should be through zoning. Zoning has case law that's over 100 years old. It's well developed. It's well thought through, and it creates a great template. And what we're talking about with non-metallic police power ordinances is that you have a whole new world that has very little case law or almost zero, and trying to find our way through, as Mr. Stottleman said, it's a large gray area.
Rick Stottleman, why would a town or village or county not want to become zoned? What are their arguments?
I think there are people, much as Brian said, that don't want to regulate other land uses. Zoning is still, in some parts of the state, considered too much control. It takes away property rights in some people's views. There's always the argument that when you have a regulation, you're taking away property rights for a particular use that maybe somebody wanted to do. But part of zoning and any other local regulation also should be looked at as what it does in protecting the community and the neighbors. So it needs to be a balance. And even under zoning, if they can go too far, if they try to prohibit certain things, and although it's the strongest land use control, they can even be challenged. Zoning is just still one of those things that some people oppose. It actually has requirements, much like licensing, to be reasonable and can be challenged if being unconstitutional or arbitrary and capricious or vague. So there can be challenges even on zoning. But it is one of those things that some people would rather not have all the regulations of all land use and only target certain things with licensing ordinances.
We're talking this hour about local control as it relates to non-metallic mining, specifically known as industrial sand mining, also known as frac sand mining. We've got Brian Nodolf. He's an attorney with Spangler, Nodolf, Bruder, and Klinkhammer, LLC in Eau Claire. He also represents a frac sand mine firm in Pepin County. We've got Rick Stottleman, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Towns Association, joining us by phone from Shawano. And we've got a full list of callers on the line that we want to work through them right now. First, Willem in Colfax, you're on the air. What's your question or comment?
I had a comment. I think, you know, the American Revolution was sort of founded on this idea of local control. And the Founding Fathers also had an interest in our leaders being what they called disinterested. And I think that this bill that Mr. Tiffany wrote, he wrote for the non-metallic sand mining industry, and I don't think that's how, you know, our government is supposed to work. I don't think our representatives should be representing specific industries and helping them do what they want to do. And I think the idea of local control is that we do live in a community and as neighbors, and the idea of private property rights, I can't store nuclear waste on my property. I can't blare loud music all night on my property. I can't have fireworks every night on my property. These mines are different than other things that people want to do with their property, what kind of house they want to build, what kind of crops they want to grow, things like that. This changes the very nature of a community by, you know, 24-hour-a-day operations, lighting, the noise, the traffic, the whole, basically changing the whole physical environment of a community and all the flora and fauna that's associated with taking down hills and this activity, which I think is a sort of in an age when there's climate change and things like that, that I don't think we should be digging a deeper hole by going full bore into a industry that supports creating more CO2.
Well, Willem, let me ask you, you know, property rights, you've got the right to peace and privacy, or privacy, you know, and your way of life. But what about the devil's advocate position that those people that have, you know, deposits of silica sand, don't they have the right to mine that?
Not when it affects the whole community in such a negative way. Like, it wouldn't matter to my neighbor. It doesn't matter to me whether they grow corn or soybeans or how they paint their house, but it does matter to me that, you know, across the street from my house, there could be what used to be an agricultural and rural residential area is now being turned into an industrial area. That does affect me,
sure.
And it affects my property value. So in a sense, it affects me in a material way because it reduces the value of my property and makes it hard for me to sell my property. It makes it hard for me
gotcha. To
have customers. I have a small business. No one wants to come here. If it's, you know, they come here for the beauty of the area, not to see industrial sand mines.
All right, Willem, thanks so much for the call. I'm going to put that to Brian Nodolf. You know, you've got the discussion of property rights. You know, the individuals have the right, you know, to mine the property, but the neighbors also have rights to peace and quiet, don't they?
Absolutely, and really this is a perfect example of why you want something like zoning, because zoning and through its case law and through the ordinances create a good balance in determining whether or not something is appropriate for an area and if it is, what conditions go upon it. And those are exactly the balances that the caller was talking about. I did have one issue with what the caller said, was that what's known as Senate Bill 632 was written for the industry and they shouldn't be doing that. Actually, its predecessor, SB 349, was broad-based, and it said that if you want to regulate land use in certain activities, not just mining, that it should be done in zoning. And in fact, the Towns Association said, no, we object to this bill, and Mr. Stottleman talked about it, because we find it's far too broad. It covers too many things. So we encourage them to look at refining a bill. And that's exactly what happened here. So I think that's an important distinction that needs to be made.
Well, I was going to kind of try to ease into the Senate Bill 632 and 349, but let's go straight for it. Senate Bill 349, Rick, would you agree with Brian's statement that you felt that was too broad, and why?
Yes, because as indicated, 349, which actually had a hearing back in October of last year, would have preempted any licensing ordinances, and as indicated, it would have, and it wasn't just non-metallic. Secondly, it would have preempted other types of environmental regulations, which went beyond just the licensing issues in part, and that was much broader. There was a lot of questions whether that would preempt on some of the requirements we have for stormwater, floodplain control, and things like that. And then the third part of it is, which would apply to all types of road agreements, we would have had to use a process using traffic analysis to reach agreements on road user agreements if damage was to be done. As Brian said, that 349 was much broader than just non-metallic mining. The Senate Bill 632, which was introduced and had the hearing in March of this year, was intended to be much narrower and only apply to non-metallic mining, and to really try to create a codification, which is a statutory reference to a principle that the courts have announced of diminishing assets, and that's specific to non-metallic mining, that when you have a non-metallic mining resource, you have a right to use it. And in that, those cases were primarily gravel pits. We had smaller parcels, 40 acres possibly, and another 40 adjoining, which was a resource. First section, nine sections of 632 are specific to the zoning references under zoning law to codify it. But the bill did go on 632 to some other provisions, which we had concerns with, of off-site processing plants, off-site transload facilities, and then also specifically addressing the issues of borrow sites and the borrow sites for state highway projects. So 632 was much narrower than 349, and it was intended to be directed more toward just non-metallic mining as opposed to what was the general preemption in 349.
I do have to ask, though, Rick, that when this bill first came out, or at least when the press got a hold of it, this Senate Bill 632 that was introduced by Republicans Tom Tiffany in the Senate and Joan Baldwin in the Assembly, I had heard, and I think you told me, that the Towns Association had a neutral stance on it, but then during the public hearing, that you'd mentioned that the Towns Association Board of Directors had met and unanimously opposed it. What happened there?
Well, I had been working with Senator Tiffany from the 349. We had several meetings in December and January of our concerns in Senate Bill 349. And Senator Tiffany heard us, and that's why I think the 632 was dramatically narrowed up. I had stated it was my opinion that it was an attempt to codify the diminishing assets. It was my opinion. The Board of Directors had not seen the latest bill, 632, when I made those comments and when I'd been asked by Senator Tiffany what our position would be, I indicated it would be my belief that we could be neutral because it was narrowing the bill dramatically. It was attempting to codify. What happened then is during the week that the bill was actually out for the public kind of to see it, our board of directors heard loud and clear from citizens and towns, particularly in the areas where non-metallic mining was, is that this went beyond what they believed would be just diminishing assets of existing non-metallic mining. Again, the difference that's been alluded to even by the first caller, that industrial sand tends to be much bigger sites and have greater impacts than what some of the old sand and gravel pits that we traditionally think of. As a result, our board of directors, prior to the hearing on March 3rd, actually had a phone call after seeing the bill for about a week and hearing from a lot of people, took a formal position to oppose it, and it was based on the idea that although it was an attempt to codify diminishing assets, in large part, they viewed it as being a much greater impact because of the nature of industrial sand, because of expanding the principle not just to the mining area but also to the transloads facilities, the processing facilities, and then also the issue on the borrow sites, which wasn't as big of a concern for us.
Well, with that, let's take our first break. It'll just be a brief one. We'll be back on the air in just a second, and we'll also take some more callers. We're talking about local control as it relates to industrial sand mining, non-metallic mining. This is the West Side. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got a lot of callers waiting to get on, so be patient. You can also leave a question or a comment on our West Side Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and look for The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're talking about frac sand mining and the bigger discussion of local control as it relates to industrial sand mining and non-metallic mining. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. Phone lines are full right now, but we're going to work through some callers right now. Joining me is Brian Nodolf. He's an attorney with Spangler Flory here in Eau Claire, represents Greg Beckel Trucking and Excavating, which operates a sand mine in the town of Frankfort in Pepin County. Also joining us by phone from Shawano is Rick Stottleman. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Towns Association. Again, the number 1-800-228-5615. We go to Eau Claire. Christine, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I have a comment to make. I am in full support of local government and our policing powers, because there's an elephant in the room, and that is the non-renewable resources that these corporations are utilizing, and such as our aquifer. And as far as I know, clean water and clean air still belongs to everyone. And when those non-renewable resources are being utilized, it is the people with local government and a voice in policing power who suffer it first and have a voice to say, hey, our water is being utilized, not only utilized, but potentially, and there's always a great potential for pollution. In addition to that, we are the people who have to breathe the air from these silica sand mines. Now, if we lose that voice, I have a hard time believing that zoning or the state is going to, without this knowledge, be able to regulate it, because it isn't very well regulated right now. And I'm not sure that regulation is the sole measure of safety. So thank you for listening to my comment. But
well, before I let you go, Christine, let me ask you one question. Some of the complaints among people that are in support of the industry, or you know, the industry officials themselves, are complaining that through some of these local ordinances, the towns are trying to create, you know, multiple DNRs. In other words, that it's not the town's role to regulate things that the DNR already oversees, which is air and water pollution. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm talking about usage. This is a non-renewable resource. Both of those are. And are we going to give permission to poison it only this much, when the issue is, when it's gone, it's gone? What kind of corporation is going to ensure that they're not going to utilize or pollute all of this non-renewable resource? I haven't heard one word, and I've attended many, many, many meetings, and no one answers that question. So I just want to put it out there. There's a huge elephant in this room. Property rights is one issue. Totally get it. But I do not understand why the elephants that we're all concerned about are never discussed except through regulation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Christine. Good questions, good comments. Any thoughts on that, Brian Nodal?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think the caller really hits on something that I think is the misconception that's put out there, you know, that there's an unknown elephant in the room. First, I mean, the caller makes the assumption that no other industry utilizes air and water in the state. All industries do, and we all learn to coexist, and we all work within the confines of the law. The second fallacy we often hear is that, well, the DNR isn't doing anything. And as I testified in Senate Bill 632, I've had to go through getting air permits and dealing with our various water permits. I would challenge anybody to come and talk to me and find where the DNR is lacking, because it is an extensive and exhausting process to obtain our air and water permits. Will those ever change over time? Certainly. I mean, the standards that the state applies now are not the same standards that were applied 30 years ago. And one of the things we heard in Senate Bill 632 is, don't take this control away from the locals in terms of how to set air and water standards. My experience in dealing with air and water standards is that you don't want locals to have that control for a number of reasons. One, town governments, by and large, and Mr. Stadelman can certainly talk to this issue, do not have the resources and the expertise to create, as you call them, their own mini DNRs. Second of all, you want one good, consistent state regulation that can build upon information it may obtain from other areas. For instance, if the proponents of local control would say the town of Frankfurt should control their air and water, and they set a very rigorous standard, the town of Waterville next door may say, you know what, we're just not going to get involved. If there's not a state standard, then you don't have any control and regulation in that. So really, it's key to have that done at a very state level. And local control should be involved. It's done through the siting. It's done through what I consider to be the traditional zoning principles. The last comment I wanted to make in respect to the caller is that you heard the term corporations. And I hear that term a lot. Usually the term Texas is usually referred to them as well. It certainly has a negative connotation. You've talked about my client, which is Greg Beckel Trucking Excavating. They're a Wisconsin business. They're a Pierce-Pepin County business. They employ 38 local people. So to cover everybody with a broad stroke of, say, these big corporations is simply inaccurate. There's a very local component to this industry as well.
If I could follow up, Ryan, you mentioned that, you know, the permitting process is rigorous, and I'm sure the paperwork is just ridiculous, but there is concern, and there's among the people that are opposed to the industry and just have concerns about it, that the regulations exist, but you've only got a small handful of people at the DNR that actually are tasked with doing this when you've got an exponential growth of the industry. So for all the permitting that you've had to go through with your company, has there been any actual inspections?
Mm-hmm. We have had sites that have been inspected, and yes, they do. And I think that's a very valid question, one, frankly, that I don't know anybody except for probably the upper levels in DNR can probably thoughtfully and correctly answer in terms of where their staff resources are. You know, there's a right. great debate about where those go, but I'm certainly not opposed to the DNR increasing staff if they feel the need. But, you know, my comments are always related to that's a DNR call mm-hmm. in terms of regulation in that respect.
Say, Rick Stottleman, I'm wondering, what's your take and what's the town's association's take on local governments using police powers to set air and water quality standards that might be more rigorous than what the DNR at the state level has set?
Well, I really recognize the concerns of the caller and a lot of people that don't feel that the current state standards are adequate or there could be just much stronger. But we have not recommended that local towns and counties try to set air and water quality standards. As Brian indicated, there's questions of whether they can be enforced, whether they can be measured. And to this extent, our regulations have attempted to control the impacts, much as one of the first caller talked about, on lighting, travel on roads, hours of operation, blasting, impacts on potentially downgradient water wells, so there could be some testing done. And again, some of the things that what they're talking about, is they would like to have local governments set air standards or monitoring standards. That we really are not recommending because we think it goes too far. A little bit of follow-up on the comment about adequate staff that was mentioned. The DNR, actually, in their budget request from last year, which was debated in the state legislature in 2013, actually, so it was put in 2012, was requested 10 more people in air and water monitoring capacity at the department, not just for non-metallic, but additional staff. The state budget last year in 2013, though, only offered two additional staff, and we supported the DNR request for more staff, and I think there are a lot of people that would feel more comfortable if DNR had bigger staff and could do a more thorough job of enforcement. They've had citations on certain parts. It's typically done with soil and erosion control issues, and I don't know of any at this point of actual off-site citations for air or quality issues. But again, it gives a comfort level for the citizens to believe that they need to be as strong of enforcement and regulation as possible, particularly if it's going to be done at the state level. And we certainly support having strong regulations, but be reasonable. That's important for the industry as any other industry.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jim in Chimney Rock calling. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks so much. What's your question?
Thank you very much. First of all, my name is Tim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Chimney Rock is in Trempealeau County at the heart of the frac sand debate. And there are three things I would like to mention that no one actually has talked about before. First of all, if Mr. Nordhoff is advocating increased regulation and saying that the sand industry needs to be protected from townships who are somehow on a runaway path of enforcing laws against the sand mining industry, I think Mr. Nordhoff and the whole sand industry should acknowledge that there is an enormous amount of public resistance to sand industry because people do realize that sand mining is very destructive to both the environment and the community. At the very least, the industry should acknowledge the fact that they've created a public relations fiasco of epic proportions. The second point I'd like to make is that Mr. Nordhoff says that townships should use zoning, but in the most recent bill, SB 632, the industry intentionally wrote in a loophole that would allow corporations or sand mining projects to avoid zoning. They simply by registering an area as having marketable non-metallic mining deposits, they created a loophole. So Mr. Nord says use zoning, but on the other hand, without mentioning anything, is advocating a bill that creates a zoning loophole.
All right.
And one more point.
Sure.
And that is that I keep hearing also from sand industry advocates that the people who are opposing the sand industry are somehow crazies or off the charts or malcontents and that sort of thing. I invite the industry and Mr. Saddleman, to look at the slate of candidates for county board positions in both Trempealeau County and Buffalo County. And we better realize that there is an enormous groundswell of resentment against the sand mine invasion. And people are taking the only legal recourse they have, which is first at the township level and then at the county level. But their people are in these counties are doing their best to protect themselves against really what is an invasive force. And the DNR is certainly not helping us. The DNR has been emasculated by the Walker administration. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tim, for the call. Number eight is 800-228-5615. We're rolling right through the calls. First, Brian, I'm interested in there has been a lot of resistance to this industry and just to the proliferation of it. Does that kind of resistance among certain groups of people, does that translate into, nobody wants it?
Not at all. In fact, one of the first projects I was involved in was a project called EOG Resources, which is in Chippewa Falls. It's a city which until very recently I lived in at the same time I did the project.
Mm-hmm.
And what we would find is that you would often hear comments about, oh, the public is opposed to it. And you would go to a city council meeting and perhaps there would be 30 people there opposed to it. And they would say, look, there's simply no one here saying we support this. And what we would find is when we go out and we would talk to people and we would do polling and that type of thing was that a large number of people were in favor of it and they simply didn't want to get involved because they know their neighbors. They may not agree with their neighbors, but they don't want to be yelled at by their neighbors. They don't want to be told they're wrong. They don't want to get into the fight. And what we found in Chippewa is that people said, oh, well, when this comes, people will leave the school district. Jobs are going to go away, all these things. What happened is quite the opposite. I mean, you'll find that the city of Chippewa Falls is quite vibrant because of it. In fact, in large part, they have a new downtown development that's paid with TIF dollars that are in part taken care of by EOG Resources. They have not seen the exodus from the school. They have not seen they've seen the growth in jobs, in fact.
Well, how about the loophole aspect in 632?
Sure, and it's simply not true. What Senate Bill 632 does is simply it seeks to put police power ordinances on the same footing as zoning. And in zoning, you could do what's called a marketable mineral registration that basically said that if you have a resource, you can register it now so that at some point in the future, if the municipality changes the zoning to prohibit you from mining it, you're protected. We often hear people talk about 632 as preempting local control. It doesn't. It simply says two instances. I'll give you two very good examples. If my company was there before the town creates their ordinance, then my company is not subject to it, just like it wouldn't be if we were there before zoning. The second example is it said, look, if the ordinance was there and you came there and you're covered by the ordinance, fine. But then that's the ordinance you're covered by. You can't change the rules 5 years down the road. Nobody would want to be in that scenario. So what Senate Bill 632 simply does is simply says, if you want to have police power, non-metallic police power ordinances, then they shall be dealt with the same way that zoning is, and you shall be afforded the same protections as a landowner, as a property owner, as you would under zoning.
And for both of you, but I'll start with Rick Stottleman, the thought that, I'm losing it now, the registration of the properties and the exemption of companies from new regulations, I think it was Kathleen Weinhout that used the analogy that, this industry is kind of like a toddler in Wisconsin, meaning that it's fairly new, it is regulated, but some people are worried that we're going to find out new things about health concerns, et cetera. What about the inability for a local town, county, or village to create new ordinances for an industry when new information might come out? Rick Stottleman.
Well, first of all, the registration aspect that's been referred to here has been in law for about 10 to 12 years. It's when we actually codified some of the reclamation requirements, the non-metallic mining reclamation, when a site of gravel pit or sand pit and now industrial sand has to meet for reclaiming. And so the codification at that time was that a known resource could be registered through the Register of Deeds. There's a process to give notice to local government, and it can be recorded. The intent of that was that local government would be put on notice that there is a non-metallic resource there, and we at the town and county level should appropriately plan for it and recognize it as part of our comprehensive planning issue. So that's been around for a while. Now, and as you alluded to, the fact that it's been there in law is now being impacted by 632 if it would have passed, and that, in effect, those sites that have been registered would, in fact, be protected by that same concept. Diminishing assets are, in effect, grandfathered in from new regulations. And that is a concern that we've expressed, as well as I know some of the people Senator Vinehout referred to, as we really don't know as much about this industry. It's only been here. I can't say it hasn't been in our state for a long time, because there's at least four or five sites that have been in operation in industrial sand for quite a while. They tended to be sites that were, they were for particular uses. They were not as many. Now that we have over 100 non-metallic mines for industrial sand plus processing plants, there's a lot more concern about it. And because these sites tend to be much bigger than what the traditional registration for gravel pits were, that's the concern. And as we see, and maybe as we get more technology, and particularly as we get into protecting issues related to air and water, we might find new technology. There may be concerns raised. So that's one of the reasons why I heard, and our board of directors actually felt, that the Bill 632, as far as the registration was of concern, because there is going to be changes over time that we could no longer apply if the registration had occurred before an ordinance was.
And Brian Odolph, again, like, if something were to be found out that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the silica dust, and there's a lot of different opinions on that. There are some studies ongoing right now to try to figure out if there's an issue. But theoretically, if there was something that came up that where locals and maybe even the industry said, oh, well, we didn't expect this, and the local governments had their hands tied, wouldn't that be a bad thing?
It wouldn't, because what I've been talking about is a split jurisdiction issue of the local governments have the what I call the traditional siting controls of how far you should have your setback from the road, hours of operation, lighting, those types of things. I mean, Mr. Stottleman, and this is one of the issues I have with the town association, is they say, well, yeah, we really aren't necessarily encouraging our local governments to have air and water control, but at the same time, don't take it away from us. What we're saying is, look, those things may very well change over time, because as we've looked, if you look 50 years ago in any industry, the standards are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those would be administered on a state level, and 632 does not impact the state's ability to control that issue. It's simply dealing with the reality of you want a consistent, uniform control of air and water by the state, not by the locals.
We're going to take our final break now on the west side. We're talking about local control as it relates to industrial sand mining, also known as non-metallic mining. I'm joined by Brian Nodolph, an Eau Claire attorney who represents Greg Beckel Trucking and Excavating. It's a frac sand mining firm, it has a frac sand mining interest in Pepin County. And also Rick Stottleman, he's the executive director of the Wisconsin Towns Association. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Take some more of your calls. This is the West Side. Yes, definitely tune in next Monday. We're going to have a big discussion about the confluence the day before the referenda questions are answered by voters. But right now we're talking about frac sand mining and local control, that whole interplay and how it relates. Also, some bills that have been introduced recently that have attempted to change that relationship. The number to call in, 800-228-5615. We've got full phone lines right now. I'm going to work through as many as we can and many callers as we can before the end of the hour. So for now, we're going to go to Washburn, and we've got Kurt on the line. Kurt, thanks so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I see this as a rights-based issue. A community has a right to say no to any kind of corporation trying to move in on them. And they're finding that they don't have that right. They're always brushing up against their structure of law that favors the corporation over the local community governing body. And if that happens, I really wonder if we actually do live in a democracy. I mean, it should be the other way around. The local governing body should have more rights and more power to say no than the corporation moving in on them.
Sure. Okay. Well, thanks for the comment there, Kurt. What about that? I mean, where is it legal or illegal for a county or any local government to actually specifically single out one industry? Brian Nordoff, I'll start with you.
No, it's not. I mean, and especially with police power ordinances, they can regulate. They cannot prohibit. The problem that we're seeing is that many governments say, okay, wink, wink, nod, nod, we aren't going to prohibit you, but we will regulate you to death. So as a practical matter, you will be prohibited. With zoning, you can say in certain scenarios it is not permissible in this location. And that's why, again, I think the caller is missing the point. There's a great tool out there that says, here's where we want certain activities to occur, here's where we don't, and you have a very good power if you properly utilize zoning in that case. Police powers do not afford that. They can only allow regulation. They cannot allow prohibition in certain areas.
Rick Stellman, your thoughts?
Well, whether it's zoning or a licensing police power type ordinance, they need to be reasonable. And I think the point is that we can't necessarily pick out one business or one industry and try to set standards that are unreasonable. So, again, any type of local regulation needs to be reasonable, and arbitrary is going to be challenged, and it could be found unconstitutional. So, again, we would argue that both zoning and licensing ordinances need to be reasonable, and they can be defended on the basis of public health and safety.
Now, Brian Nordoff, the company you represent, there's been some issues between it and the town of Frankfort and the county. What are some of the contentions that Greg Beckel Trucking has had with the town and some of its agreements? I know that you can't talk about all of it, I'm sure, but some basics.
Sure. With the town, we do have a agreement to mine in lieu of their ordinance or in satisfaction of their ordinance that did come about after we were up and operating. They did adopt their ordinance, which creates a very interesting structure for us. It's been contentious. We have great respect for the town government. They've certainly expounded their views, and we're still working through some issues. So we respectfully agree to disagree on issues, but we continue to talk and we continue to work through them. Our experience with Pepin County has not been as pleasant. In particular, we talked about road use agreements. We were stuck in a scenario of we had opened our mine, we'd received all of our permits, and we were beginning to get ready to actually transport product. And the county said, well, if you wish to do that, you'll need to enter into a road agreement. And basically, here are the terms. The terms of that, in essence, is we had to reconstruct all of the road, even though the town or the county's road had some deteriorating conditions already. Not only do we have to do that, but they said, well, we're not really sure that our own engineers quite got this right, so we'll need to deposit $1 million with the county in cash just in case. And I have no issue with having reasonable road agreements, and I think Mr. Stallman gets to the point of talking about reasonable, and reasonable is key. We don't believe that was a reasonable agreement, but we were left with very little choice in that case.
All right. One final caller we'll take. This one is in Pepin County. Paul, you're on the air. Quickly, if you could, what's on your mind?
Sure. You had mentioned earlier, like, zoning and building codes and stuff, and you know, it almost sounds like who wouldn't be against it. And I can tell you, I'm in the east end of Pepin County in a small township, and when we have a town hall meeting, there's usually about six people there. Unless zoning or building codes is on the agenda, the place is packed with two groups of people, Amish and the old people that are about to retire. The Amish want nothing to do with any kind of building code, zoning, anything like that. They totally are against it. And so are the people that are ready to retire because they got a 100 or 200-acre farm. Now they're going to retire. They want to cash in. So the one person leaving the community changes the community for everybody else. Now, I realize we need gas, oil, fuel. You know, everybody wants the stuff, but nobody wants it right next door to them. So, you know, I think something in the middle has to be found where everybody's happy. I mean, obviously, we got to find an agreement there, but don't forget, you know, let's look up the Northern Michigan. To this day, I think the company is Gogobic Taconite Mining, owns all the mining rights to, like, the entire Upper Peninsula. And they have mined up there for decades. I mean, those laws go back 100 years.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Paul. Rick Settleman, how do you make everybody happy?
Well, I don't think you ever can. I mean, individuals are going to have their own views. I think part of what I would use to defend, and this goes to the zoning in particular, a zoning ordinance where you set out areas where you're going to permit things or we're going to be conditional use should be based upon a comprehensive plan. And part of that comprehensive plan is to set a vision for your community. And hopefully you bring different interest groups together and you try to look at what's the best interest of the community as a whole and balance out the individual property rights versus that. So zoning, as I said in the very beginning, is our strongest control. It does try to accomplish some of that compromise through comprehensive planning, which is ultimately got to be decided by someone. And in the case of town, it's the town board. In the case of the county, it's the county board. And I can't say that we're ever going to have everybody in agreement, but at some point the process should lend itself to open dialogue, and ultimately elected officials are elected to make the easy decisions.
Now, we've got less than a minute. I'm going to ask both of you real quick. Rick Stottleman, 632 died this session. Do you think it'll be popping up again next session?
I'll leave that up to the industry. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I think the concept of diminishing assets as it applied to the non-metallic was a reasonable court doctrine and is there. As it goes to an industrial sand, though, is a much broader issue, and as 632 went beyond that a little bit, we'll have concerns. So I can say, yes, it'll be up to the industry if they want to come back. We'll not be asking for it.
All right. Thanks so much. That's our time, gentlemen. I'd like to thank my guests for the discussion this hour. Brian Nodolf is an attorney in Eau Claire representing a sand mining firm in Pepin County. Rick Stottleman is the executive director of the Wisconsin Towns Association. Thanks so much for both of your discussions. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Tiffany Coggins, and Dean Collenbeck. Later this week and Monday morning, we'll be talking about the upcoming Confluence referendum. Tune into the Spectrum West on Thursday morning, and then on the West Side next Monday morning to hear all about it and get your views in as well. Thanks again. We'll talk again next Monday morning.